It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And yes, we are live. We are off and running on this fourth day of December 2018. There are 27 days remaining in the tired, old, worn-out 2018. Yes, indeed. This is the horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That's where you, in fact, would go if, for instance, you wanted to participate in the Merry Madcap Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn Chat Room. Go to HeadOn.live, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right in because folks are eager to see you. Yes, if you do that, you'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Laurel and Otto and VP Blom, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has indeed folded space this evening to become Man Cave. You'll also be moderated by pinch-hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy and aficionado of organic sauerkraut, Steve, from Georgistan. It will probably be another awesome, awesome evening right there in the chat room. And we are rocking along on both streams. Apparently things are working well this evening. We had some problems with the high-quality stream last evening, but maybe they've resolved by now. That's a lovely thing if they have. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. You might recall that that Titanic Tuesday is reserved for those manifestations of white-wing intellect, which are the equivalent of yelling full steam ahead when told that there is an iceberg in the offing. Mm-hmm. That's what that's about. It goes back to a moment in radio in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia, many, many years ago, when our buddy Jim was listening and he heard a guy named Steve, the morning monotone, take a call from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers, who asked him, "Steve, how come you reckon it is that there is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? Because I seen them down in the coal mines. I seen seashells and fern fronds and palm trees and hell, I hadn't been nowhere near Grandma's secret recipe nor nothing. I see them down in the mines, them seashells and whatnot. Why you reckon they's there, Steve?" To which Steve replied in a monotone that could shatter glass from the force of sheer boredom, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." And so, with the introduction of Titanic plates into the lexicon, Titanic Tuesday was born here at the Horn. Still no word, though, on the whereabouts of the Titanic sterno holders, but we yet retain some hope for the future. And we have thanks to send out. We thank our subscribers each and every evening at the beginning of the program. So thanks go out to Paul. Thank you, Paul, very kindly. Thank you to Thomas. And thank you very kindly to Kelly. Thank you, each of you, for being a partial sponsor of the program who helps keep all of this on the air. And, in fact, helps us knock down all the subscribers taken together, help us knock down about a quarter of the month's fundraising, leaving the other three quarters of the fundraising to be done during the live program. If you would like to join Kelly and Thomas and Paul, well, just run over to headon.live and click that PayPal button and put 10.00 in the field and say, make this happen every month. And then you set it and forget it, and we will be one person closer to the total of $410 a month subscribers we're looking for so that one day we won't have to do fundraising at the beginning of the program at all during the program, and can simply thank listeners and thank subscribers and move on. We are not there yet, however. Because, well, we don't have those 400 subscribers. But we do manage to keep the program going from month to month to month. Now, yesterday was Shirley's Memorial Challenge. We fell short on that, rather badly short. And I'm going to keep it open this evening. Just because, well, it fell on the 3rd instead of the 1st, and maybe that messed with people a little bit. I don't know. But I'm going to keep it open. And so the fundraising goal this evening is $340. If we meet 140 of that, well, Shirley's challenge will have been met, and your contributions will have been doubled, because last night we managed to raise $60. Of the 200 we needed to raise. So Shirley's challenge remains on the table, and we need to raise $340 this evening. That's 10 at 34, or 34 people at $10. Remember, when you kick in at $10 a month via, well, you know, PayPal or Patreon, well, then, by Jove, what you're doing is you are giving something on the order of less than 16 cents per hour of programming to keep everything on the air. That works out to a daily outlay of funds that's something on the order of, a 20th of a cup of corporate coffee or less, or a little less than half of a hamburger. At a hamburger joint like McDonald's or Burger Thing, in either of which cases you're probably doing more for yourself this way than you would be if you were going to one of those places every day, because we will here at the Horn expand your mind, but we won't harden your arteries. So we've got that going for us, which is good. Okay, so with all of that having been said, let us move forward into the wonderful world of Titanic intellect. Oh, and a quick program note before we get started. I've had a bunch of requests and comments since he was on. So tomorrow evening, my old buddy Dan Fisher will be joining us to update us on his recuperation from his heart transplant, and he will we'll talk a little politics, we'll talk a little or a lot of film and television production, things like that, and hopefully you will enjoy it as much as you did last time. Tomorrow we'll do the whole prayer meeting Wednesday thing at the top of the program, and then about 7 o'clock Dan will join me for another rollicking conversation. I have a feeling, just like last time, we won't have any trouble whatsoever filling up the time. So I'm looking forward to it. I hope that you are too. Oh, let's see. Titanic intellect. Where to begin? Hey, how about Oklahoma? Because if this doesn't qualify as Titanic Tuesday, Titanic intellect, then we probably just better give up the whole idea of Titanic Tuesday and just find another theme. Of course, when I say Oklahoma, it goes almost without saying that well, it's going to be pretty outlandish. You don't get much more maggoty than the state of Oklahoma, Stan. Despite the presence there of some of good progressives, good liberals, if you go over to my Facebook page, you will find an essay written today. Well, it's not really an essay. It's a futuristic satire by Tulsa's own Barry Friedman. Go read it. It's published on Medium, so give it some claps. What Barry did is he took, and this isn't the Oklahoma story. This is just a reminder. He imagined himself into the future and wondered what it would be like in this country when the day comes that we have to deal with the funeral. And not by any unnatural, he makes it clear, you know, but when we have to deal with the funeral of Donald the John Trump. And it is, it's hilarious, because Barry has a special ability to write in the voices of right-wing pundits and panjandrums and whatnot. And he channels Ivanka and Rudy Giuliani in ways that would, well, if that was something that was happening inside my mind, I would probably be medicated right out of anything resembling coherence. But it's on my Facebook page. Go over and read it. And take into account the fact that, like me, Barry seems to be convinced that the impeachment of Donald Trump by the House of Representatives will lead to his reelection in 2020. I'm utterly convinced of it. But maybe after the program, go and read it. I think you'll enjoy it. I think you'll laugh, and I think you'll be a bit sobered too. As Ron in the far frozen north says, I understand Barry's attraction to Tulsa, what with the availability of parking and all that. And the earthquakes are down to just two a day. Really? Only two, Ron? Goodness me. And what a wealth of liberal talent Tulsa has had. Between Barry Friedman and the late, great Bart Kopp, should any town of similar size have such a wealth of liberal humor? I don't know, but it's just how the world works out. Let's see. David in South Carolina, Stan, I will answer that off air. Talking about good eats near campus in Morgantown, West Virginia. It's been a while, so things have changed a lot. I don't really know, but I'll give it some thought. Okay, Oklahoma. Yeah, Flavio says, I've lived here long enough to know that Barry Friedman's satire is frighteningly accurate. What he writes about is exactly how it would go down. So there's another tease to go and read and go and read Barry's piece. But back to Oklahoma and Titanic Tuesday. Yes. I didn't know that Oklahoma, you know, you learn a little something new every day, and I'll tuck this away, and someday it'll come in handy, I presume. I had no idea that Oklahoma had a place called Canadian County. But they do. And Canadian County is apparently part of the greater... of a greater suburban area. And, of course, they have a Canadian County Republican Party. The Associated Press reports that a man by the name of Andrew Lopez, who is the chair of the Canadian County Republican Party, has declared that we should get rid of public education. Now, this is titanic intellect in the extreme. The sad thing is, though, it is a it's also a line of, well, loosely using the term, thought that is not at all unusual in maggot circles. And not just maggots. Do you remember when Rick Perry of Head Ranch, Texas, was still running for president, laughably, and couldn't remember the cabinet offices that he wanted to eliminate? Well, one of them was the Department of Education. The elimination of the United States Department of Education has been a Republican masturbation fantasy for, you know, going all the way back to good old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan. In his letter, this letter written by Andrew Lopez, he said the following: a better pathway would be to abolish public education, which is not a proper role of government, and allow the free market to determine pay and funding, eliminating the annual heartache we experience over this subject. Apparently, Andrew Lopez has some hurt peelings because teachers in Oklahoma got all uppity last year over the fact that they're not paid worth shit. So instead of trying to solve the problem, instead of doing right by not just teachers, but the children and therefore the future of the state of Oklahoma, instead of addressing the systemic and root causes of the issue, well, no, Andrew Lopez of the Canadian County, Oklahoma Republican Party, thinks we should just throw out the baby with the bathwater and probably give up on that whole bathing thing in the long run. You know, highfalutin, overrated that whole bathing thing. Among other things, he wants public schools to get their revenue from advertising and endowments and charging students to go to school and sponsorships of some sort instead of asking the taxpayers of the state of Oklahoma to, you know, pay for the education of Oklahoma's children and let the free market determine pay and funding. Well, left to the tender mercies of the free market, I'm sure that teachers in Oklahoma Stan would be compensated perhaps on an order of something less than minimum wage. Because after all, if Oklahoma Stan students are out there learning that liberal mathematics and that liberal geography and them liberal spelling words, then that spells, well, it doesn't spell, it doesn't make for a happy future for the Republican Party of the state of Oklahoma, Stan. Advertising? Really? So after the teacher asks little Johnny to spell rat, R-A-T, rat, great big goddamn rat with a dick this big, she or he would then say, brought to you by Carl's Jr. Why do you keep saying that? Well, because they pay me every time I do. Funny thing is, he wrote two letters, Lopez did. One was a little less inflammatory than the other. And when the idea of completely eliminating public education sort of got out there into the public consciousness, Andrew Lopez began dancing. On the first letter, we came with the strong stance that education is not a proper role of government. And while we still believe that, and we do, and the proper role of government is to get out of the way so as we can frack and drill our way to prosperity here in Oklahoma. I added that part. And while we still believe that, we understand it's going to be a transition period between properly funding and dealing with education as a public institution, and then letting the public assume their rightful responsibility of self-education and not allowing it to be a part of government's role. This was a real, actual, no-kidding statement that Andrew Lopez made to Oklahoma's News 4. That's a hell of an interesting phrase there. Their rightful responsibility of self-education. Hoo-wee! Can't you just imagine the maggots self-educating? Well, they already kind of are in a public context. I imagine it's devilishly difficult to talk about essentials of biology or, God knows, evolution in the state of Oklahoma, Stan. And but he walked back the whole abolishing the public education system thing to try to put a little bit better face on it. This is, after all, some titanic intellect at work. We give the examples of how to fund education, definitely, in there through endowments and sponsorships, advertising, tuition fees for families that actually use the service, because, you know, ain't everybody going to use an education system. I mean, why should you be paying property tax if you ain't got no youngins in the school? I mean, it's not like educated people in Oklahoma, Stan, are going to go on and do the things that actually make the state work. I mean, what in the hell do you need somebody who works on the state road? And why we got a state road anyway out there being able to do all that hobnobby, highfalutin reading and writing and such? And he continued, so that goes to, if you're going to have a service, don't take from others' wealth. Don't eliminate somebody's property rights to fund your child's education. We charge property tax to the citizens, and if you don't pay, you lose your property. That means we have zero property rights. No, dumbass, it doesn't. Apparently, Andrew Lopez is one of those self-educated Oklahoma Stannies. It means we're renters in the state of Oklahoma, and that's why we need to eliminate the property tax. Not saying that public education will go away, but we need to find a way to properly fund it if it shall exist. If it shall exist. Well, it already does. But in the thin gray settlings that slop around between the ears of Andrew Lopez and pass for brains, he's already imagining a world suffused with freedom in which little Oklahoma Stan children are free to be dumber in the head than the hog is in the ass. And if they want to go to school, well, that's what Sunday school is for. And what child in Oklahoma, Stan, needs more education than they can get in Sunday school for an hour before everybody goes up to big church? So I just thought that was a good place to start. Because Andrew Lopez is not taking no for an answer. What we're pushing for is to challenge the idea that we keep pouring money into education without getting down to the finer details that say, well, where's this money going? What are them teachers doing with all that money we're not paying them? I mean, we know they spend on school supplies and so forth because we don't fund the schools adequately in the first place. I mean, we're halfway to my dream of no education system at all. But what are they doing with that money? Are they out there, by God? I bet them teachers is out there buying the fancy ramen with the flavor boosting packets when they could be buying the plain ramen that's four for a dollar down to the Dollar General. Why isn't education improving? Well, because people like you keep trying to kill it. We want the money that the teachers fought for this year. Clearly, they spent time fighting for it. We want it to actually go to their salaries and be maintained for their salaries and not somehow get taken away for some special projects. Well, I'm sorry, Terrace. Terrace says, Jesus, Bob, you got to warn us before you say Oklahoma Stannies. People on this train think I'm a giggling psycho. Well, just wave them away, Terrace. No. It's okay. This is crazy fucker in West Virginia. Pay no mind. Right. Oh, Silent R. Lamar is getting on the. Going to get it. At first, it was folks over there to the Daily Coast, and now I got an email from the Daily Coast the other day that the subject line was Bob. It didn't go over well with Ron and Raleigh, and here we got Silent R. Lamar, Bob. Come on, Bob, they got NASCAR, why not NAS school? Put stickers on little Billy's wagon and his bike, and, oh yeah, do up the backpack with the AR-15 in it. You know, that's a little too close to home for comfort, Silent R. Lamar. It is, it really, really is. Well, Irish Dave wants to know, but did Okie Boy speak to their right to self-abuse as a learning experience? The right to be a jerk-off shall not be infringed. You know what? You don't want fringe because it gets in the way and it can be chafing. Ron and Raleigh, the free market? Does Mr. Lopez realize that the invisible hand of the free market is all thumbs and occasionally will slap you upside your head? I'm just saying. Well, you know, Republicans like Andrew Lopez are only into the free market as long as the free market ain't really free. When a Republican says free market, what they mean is corporate welfare for their donor class. I dare not do that regarding Andrew Lopez. Brother Deacon Asa says, given the man's name, I'd say your accent is way off. You need to bring out Javier Kincaid for this role. Stay uneducated, my friend. Yes. Oh, Jesus. Meanwhile, not infringing on any gimmicks, this is his own gimmick, Steve in New York says, my dear Bob, I don't use the police, fire department, roads, trash collection. I burn my trash. I don't want to pay taxes for any of them. You know their self-education will include holy babble. Yes, pun intended. By the way, if I never fly an airplane, I don't want to pay for the airport. I have a well. Don't want to pay taxes for any water infrastructure. By the way, welcome back. Yeah, I know. The short-sightedness. But then again, the airport should have toll gates at the landing and takeoff ends of the runway. Right. Steve says, P.S., I can't wait until Notre Dame has its ass handed to it, thereby solidifying the Irish to the second-class team that they are. I know. Look, if Notre Dame played 12 Pop Warner teams per year and ended up undefeated, there would be some Domer homers out there saying, clearly they're the best team in the land. I confess a little bit of a desire to see a repeat of 2013, in which my Alabama Crimson Tide welcomed the Notre Dame Fighting Irish and then proceeded to beat them within an inch of their life and proved that, no, they did not have any business whatsoever playing with the big boys. Andrew Lopez seems to be getting under you guys' skin. Wait a minute. Lee in New York. Bob, stop telling the advertisers they can't advertise in schools. Yeah, there's a jingle for that. There's always a jingle for stop something, the stop Bob bit. Didn't you learn, asks Lee, that A is for Apple? Microsoft wants to bring you the letter M, but some people want to stop them. Mm-hmm. Scott in San Diego pointing out, subject line, Oklahoma, during the thankfully brief time that I resided in Tulsa, I crossed paths with more than a few Titanic intellects. This was in the mid-90s. A big thing for the righties and religious nuts back then was what they referred to as outcome-based education. They wanted none of it. Another big matter of concern for them back then were the imminent late-night visits of the dreaded black helicopters, presumably headed their way to quell the rabble so they could be carted off to Clinton's new FEMA camps. I'm glad I got the hell out of the OK state. I've been there precisely once myself. As a kid, I do remember being quite enamored of the Cowboy Hall of Fame. Kind of a neat place it was. That big old life-size sculpture called The End of the Trail was deeply moving. And so was Chill Wills' Cadillac. But we can't stay in Oklahoma all the blessed night. But we got room for a couple of more emails. Robert in Australia, funding schools. So in the USA, local public schools are funded by local property taxes? Yes. Meaning rich areas have great schools, poor areas have underfunded schools? Quite often. Public schools in the USA should be federally funded so every child gets the same quality of education. It works here. Well, you know, that's because you're upside down on planet Earth, Robert. I mean, your electoral system works too, but it just won't work in the Northern Hemisphere. It just can't. Flavio, meanwhile, went looking up Andrew Lopez and said, "Check this guy out, LOL." He's a Derplahoman from the western fringe of the metro, who likes to sing and play guitar, sell junk on Facebook, and craft bizarre letters to Oklahoma lawmakers, calling them for them to, amongst other things, abolish public education, property taxes, and government-sanctioned infanticide. Oh, dear. Yeah. He's one of those fetus fetish people. Of course, they kind of have to be, don't they? I mean, you can't be a Republican anymore unless you've got yourself a first-class fetus fetish. Wow, that's really a picture of him?
Whoa. The horror. The horror. Yeah. Spelling the subject line, edjabakation, E-D-J-A-B-A-K-S-H-U-N. Todd writes in and says, Javier Kincaid, there is no need for public education anymore. The brightest, most intelligent, mentally stable genius is now president. End of story. This is firsthand information. Part two, says Steve in New York. That's cool. No money from the feds. Same with Oklahoma. The Big 12 can't play with the SEC or ACC, and the only Big Team 10 that can is Ohio State because Pope Urban crafted a spread-focused SEC-style team. And, of course, the Pope Urban's retirement was announced today, if I read that correctly. There will be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth in Sebas. So we've got all that going for us as far as Titanic intellect is concerned, but that is by far not the end of the Titanic parade. No. Not by a long damn shot. What else do we have? Interesting you would ask. Let's in our Titanic examination. Let's run over and check in on Roger Stone, shall we? He's a great guy. Just ask him; he'll tell you. Roger Stone got subpoenaed by the Senate Judiciary Committee. And it wasn't just a show up and let's have a little chat subpoena. It was a subpoena Dukas Tecum, which means bring your shit with you too when you come. Well, the lawyers for Roger Stone wrote to the Senate Judiciary Committee and said, Roger Stone ain't gonna do shit with your subpoena. You can stuff your subpoena where the sun don't shine. Well, I mean, they didn't say exactly that. They used those lawyery words. Now, just to do a little background on this, Julius Geezer, otherwise known as Individual One. That's right, he's being named in indictments now. Yes. Individual One decided to engage in a little bit of witness tampering via Twitter, praising Roger Stone for being unwilling to testify against, or at all, but presumably against Trump. And after he did that, well, the lawyers wrote to the Judiciary Committee and said, on the advice of counsel, Mr. Stone will not produce the documents requested by you in your capacity as ranking minority member. This was to Dianne Feinstein of the Judiciary Committee. And then said, Mr. Stone decries secrecy. He will not subject himself to the innuendo of non-public proceedings, nor will he confirm the existence of or produce the documents of the request for the purpose of being used in secret proceedings. This reply in response to the request by you is written with utmost respect for the committee and its staff, said the pettifogging lawyers that Roger Stone hired. So then Dianne Feinstein said, just told the world that Stone was going to assert his Fifth Amendment rights because she didn't want to be accused of running a secret proceeding. So she released his letter. Then the pettifoggers responded by saying, Rogers availing himself of his legal rights, Mr. Stone says they leak too much, and the ranking minority member tweets out Mr. Stone's letter without so much as contacting his counsel to discuss. Well, if you write a letter to Dianne Feinstein, the ranking Democratic member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and you say Roger Stone decries secrecy, well, then you're basically saying go ahead and release this here letter because we don't want it being kept in secret none. This is a special brand of Titanic intellect. It's a beautiful thing. I don't want to participate in any secret proceedings, but I'd appreciate it if you'd keep my letter saying I don't want to participate in any secret proceedings. Secret. What? You released it? Why? Oh, that's okay. That's okay. Eventually, the truth will find its way out. And it's going to be awfully damned interesting when it does. But Roger Stone seems to be convinced that he will, in fact, be the beneficiary of a pardon as long as he maintains omerta with the mob boss, you know, individual number one. Yeah, right. Well, from Oklahoma, let's toddle out to, because it's not always the stuff at the top of the Republican heap. It's those climbers down there in the minor leagues who are scrabbling for a shot at the show. And so it was with Arizona State Representative David Stringer. He comes from Yavapai County. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that somehow. I'm not sure how, but I'm sure it's mispronounced. And, David Stringer was a chairman of a commission there in Arizona, and back on the 30th day of November, in the Phoenix New Times, they reported on an address that Stringer gave at Arizona State University. In addressing those students there, he said, among other things, that black people don't blend in. They don't blend in. Yeah, let's check in real quick.
Well, why are there test
also, diversity well? Diversity in our country is relatively new.
Right? We have plenty of cultures: Irish, degree, Italian.
Like, my great grandfather's Polish. They were all European. They were all Europeans. They were all Europeans.
Yes, we now have
friends and thought Germans were white. Second or third generation, everybody looks the same. Everybody talks the same. But that's not the case with African Americans and other racial groups because they don't melt in, they don't blend in, they always look different.
Sure they do.
Irish.
Why does looking different matter?
Well, that's it. That, I don't know.
It does.
And maybe it doesn't. It doesn't to you. It doesn't. Maybe it doesn't to a lot of people. But it seems to matter to a lot of people who move out of Detroit and move out of Baltimore and move out. You know, we have white flight in this country.
Oh, it's just because of bad economic policies.
And it's people are making free choices about where they.
Yeah, that's it. For some reason or another, Stringer attended a lecture by a Professor Don Critchlow. Mm-hmm. Back on November 19th. Professor Critchlow teaches a class in political history. And so Stringer, and in the legislature of Arizona, he represents Prescott, Arizona. Went on to say that non-native English-speaking students are a burden, and said you can't compare Somali immigrants to Polish immigrants because the Somali immigrants don't look like every other kid. This was not the first foray into Republican racism for Mr. Stringer. No, not at all. Back in June, he bemoaned that there aren't enough white kids to go around in the public schools of Arizona. After he said that, the people in his district ran to the polls to re-elect him because, well, you've got to have some unrepentant, unreconstructed racists in the Arizona legislature, apparently. It's sort of a white wing affirmative action, if you will. A burden. Yep. It went on, though. Because Representative Stringer doesn't know anything about the first law of Holes. No.
And others.
I just don't see the difference between my great-grandfather, who's Polish immigrant, wanted a better life, and someone from Venezuela who wants to escape a socialist regime.
I don't see a big difference either. I mean, they're coming here for similar purposes. I think that's true.
There were ethnic issues for Polish immigrants. They got called Polak, and they discriminated against, but they are similar.
But the difference between the Polak and, say, you should say Polak. You said Polak. I'll say Polak. But the difference between the Polish-American immigrant and the immigrant from Somali is that the second-generation Polish immigrant looks like the Irish. It looks like the Irish kid and the German kid and, you know, every other kid. But the immigrant from Somali does not. So in other words, that's a question. That's a legitimate question. Does it matter? It doesn't matter to you. Maybe that's a good thing. It seems to matter to a lot of people. It seems to matter to a lot of people. I don't know. I honestly don't know. And it doesn't really matter.
You've got to take a position on that.
No, because we're talking philosophically here. My opinion and my preferences really don't. I'm an old white guy, so I live like an old white guy, you know. But you might be interested to know this. I spent my career in Washington, D.C., doing a lot of legal aid for the African-American community.
Oh, good. There's nothing like a little bit of white saviorism on Titanic Tuesday. I can say racist things because I did legal aid work for African-Americans, don't you know? Mm-hmm.
Your proposal, from what I can, is just to kind of cap off immigration. And
slow it down.
To
create more opportunity for assimilation.
Okay, so...
Too much, too fast.
Okay, so, yeah, because you end up, you're still where we are, which is still a fairly diverse society.
Yeah, very
so
very
what? Diverse. So what's your solution then? How you go about
it? I don't have a solution. I'm just pointing out a problem.
Okay.
I don't have a solution. I don't know how to fix it.
Yeah, he's just pointing out the problem. He's just noting the controversy is all.
I don't know if anybody does know how to fix it.
Sure,
I don't know how to fix that.
Yes.
I don't know how to fix that. I lived in Baltimore for years. I don't know how to fix that. Okay, but that's a different issue than immigration. Okay, because those cities are primarily African American. They're diverse. They have other groups, but they're primarily African American. The immigration thing is affecting Arizona, California, Texas, Florida, states like that in a very dramatic way. And you know, it's producing tensions and it's producing burdens on our system. Did you know that in Arizona we have a very large Hispanic-speaking school, school children?
Yeah.
A lot of the kids are, and that's what I'm studying, ESL. But we have a budget override for ESL. It's 11.5%, and then there's some other things. So it costs a lot more to educate a child who doesn't speak English as a native language.
So, okay?
So that's a burden on the taxpayers. It's a pretty significant burden.
Yeah, it sure is a burden on the taxpayers when the when immigrants come here not speaking English. Of course, it was, I guess it wasn't a burden when English-speaking immigrants came here not speaking Powhatan. Yeah, I know. Brother Deacon Asa says, come on, guy, be brave. Say it. This illusion's genocide. Tell it like it is, your God, like your God Emperor Trump. And this guy won't, you know, like I said, doesn't know a damn thing about the first rule of first law of holes, because he's just digging for all he's worth. But this is political gold in a state like Arizona, which is kind of bizarre, because Arizona only became a state in 1912, and have white people, however we're defining white, ever actually been the majority in Arizona? The Phoenix New Times did a great job getting a hold of this audio. Eventually, he did resign as chair of the House Sentencing and Recidivism Reform Committee because it became obvious that, well, you don't want anybody having anything to do with the prison industry who might be, you know, one pillowcase shy of a clavern. And then, of course, there's that tried and true oldie but goodie, why won't the black people vote for Republicans like they ought to?
The African-American vote is probably over 90% Democrat, and it's been that way for decades. The Asian-American vote, and Asian-Americans are an educated...
Notice how he says the word decades there like he's spitting out a cuss word.
...cultured... affluent, relatively speaking, in American society, they are not an underclass. They vote overwhelmingly Democratic. The Hispanics, even middle-class Hispanics, they vote overwhelmingly Democratic because the number one issue is immigrants, more of their co-religionists, there are people like them into the country. So you're never...
People like them into the country. You know what he means by that? That would be your Catholics.
Mm-hmm. ...going to get Hispanics elected as Republicans as long as the Republican Party is for border security and for lowering levels of immigration. Not
border security. Republicans aren't for border security. Republicans are for border bias, border xenophobia, border racism. There's nothing secure about putting children in cages. And by the way, it's not prayer meeting Wednesday or anything, but I'm not going to save this till tomorrow. Kudos to a church in Indianapolis, Indiana, Talibandiana. They put up their nativity scene for the season. And, you know, there was the statue of Joseph, and there was the statue of Mary, and there's the little baby Jesus. And then to make it more realistic and American, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, forever, in the universe under God, they put them all in a dog cage. They did not do this to make fun of or make sport of or suggest that that is what should happen. Instead, they did it as a sort of a reminder that Well, this is not exactly how we should be treating, what's the saying, the least among us. And, of course, along the way, Representative Stringer, has called immigration an existential threat to the United States because of what he sees as the changing demographics. Because in Stringer's world, the United States is defined by the number of white people in it. Wow. Just wow. I wish I was surprised by this. But of course, it goes without saying that I'm not. Not in the least. No. I told you we had some Titanic intellect. And plenty of it. Meanwhile, an update from yesterday evening in regard to the case out of North Carolina. Oh, wait, before I move on, a note coming in from Tracy. Don't blend in? What the entire fuck? Black people are the masters of blending in. It's called assimilation. For the longest time, that's the only way for a black person to survive in America. Fuck, I'm so good at blending in, there should be a concealer named after me. Love, the Negro formerly known as the mistress of assimilation. Precisely. And we know that to be true because of the converse to the argument that is, and no small number of people of color have heard this, stop acting white. Stop trying to talk white. Because, see, I remember the 8 years of the Obama administration where we heard a whole bunch of that. And why wouldn't a Somali immigrant blend in with, say, other members of the community of color? Is that what really bugs this guy? That in fact, he can't just look at somebody and say, well, it'd be so much easier for Mr. Stringer if he could just look at all people of color and use one good old-fashioned racial slur regardless of their origins or whereabouts. Now, wouldn't it? Sure. Damn. I mean, that's some top shelf high quality racism going on there. Damn. You can't make this stuff up. Not even if you try. Nope, not at all. So we've, by the way, Darlene in Connecticut says, subject line, Tracy deserves a cowbell for that. Cowbell awarded. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you. Scott in San Diego says, this ignorant AZ, see what he did there, holes comments. Now, wait a goddamn sheet-wearing, cross-burning minute there, Bob. What was this guy's operative term? Too much? Too fast? Holy jumping fuck. The country's only had 150-plus effing years to acclimate to the notion that it requires harmonious use of the whiter keys and the darker keys on our national instrument for the American song to be properly played. Eh, too much, too fast. Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa says, message to Tracy, you go, sister. Power to the people. Don't bleach out on us. Indeed. Ron in the far frozen north points out Republican views on both elections and brown-skinned immigration. The thieves, the thieves, the filthy little thieves. Where is it? Where is it? They stole it from us. My precious. Curse them. We hates them. It's ours, it is, and we wants it. That's another cowbell. The entirety of white Republican America as Gollum. Yeah. Lee in New York, mistress of assimilation. Tracy is definitely the mistress of assimilation. I tried to find Tracy's assimilation products, but they're so good, I can't see them. You guys are on a roll this evening. Matt in San Francisco, he must have missed it. I fear this gentleman may have missed his respect and strength in diversity class. I got a feeling maybe he it was cutting class to go out and sample the white, and I do mean white lightning during that class period. Yes. Mm-hmm. So here we are, a minute past the hour. Again, I hate to talk about it, but we got $340 to raise this evening, and hopefully meet Shirley's challenge for this final month of the year. $340 to raise. $140 of that is the remainder of Shirley's challenge, and then the rest of that is what we have to raise for this evening. And well, we got another month's worth of bills to pay. Might actually even get out in front of them if we had a fighting chance there. But don't sit around waiting for somebody else to do all the heavy lifting. The way we do this is a community effort of lots of folks, if you're able, kicking in a little bit. So there we have it. Look, let's take a quick break and come back to your calls if you are so inclined. We got somebody on the stress line right now, but the other line is open, 304-574-8178, or via Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. Either one works fine. But it's a Tuesday, and that means we have the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Enjoy.
It's Tuesday, December?
December.
December 4th, 2018.
I'm happy to say we reached consensus.
Just not on climate change with the U.S. at the G20.
Time is running out. Leaders of the world, you must lead.
A warning for a world at a crossroads as talks begin at the annual U.N. Climate Summit. Plus,
successful economic development and environmental protection go hand in hand.
The somewhat surprising environmental legacy of the late President George H.W. Bush.
All of those somewhat surprises and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And if we want our kids to know that the joy that we've known, we've got to make sure that the Earth, with its incredible regenerative capability, can restore what we've taken.
Nice thought. Maybe you should have mentioned that to your kid before he became president. Mr. Bush, this is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, a lot of crossroads, a lot of summits, a lot of politics in today's Green News Report.
Yes. First, the surprising environmental legacy of George H.W. Bush, the 41st president of the United States, who died last Friday. His policies were mixed, but he was instrumental in some landmark environmental policies. He signed the world's first international climate treaty, the Montreal Protocol, that is now succeeding in repairing the planet's protective ozone layer. He signed a major expansion of the Clean Air Act that addressed acid rain and smog-forming pollutants, and it provided the legal and regulatory basis for the Obama administration's climate change policies. And remember that dire National Climate Assessment report that the Trump administration tried to bury on Black Friday?
I do.
Yep, Bush signed that law that requires that report on climate impacts every 4 years. Bush 41's environmental legacy is a stark contrast, of course, to today's science-denying Republican Party and the Trump administration.
It certainly is, and there's a lot of things I could say, but won't for the moment, about George H.W. Bush and his presidency. But when it comes to his environmental legacy, it wasn't fantastic, but in comparison to what the Republican Party has become, including his own son, George W. Bush, and of course, Donald Trump, well, I miss the good old days, I guess.
Meanwhile, at the G20 meeting in Buenos Aires over the weekend, 19 of the 20 world leaders gathered at the summit signed a joint communique pledging to join together to fight climate change, which Trump refused to sign until the U.S. delegation carved out a special paragraph just for the U.S., reiterating Trump's intention to withdraw from the United Nations Paris Climate Agreement and with thinly veiled support for fossil fuels. And according to a comprehensive new report measuring progress toward the goals of the Paris Climate Agreement, among the G20 nations, 15 reported that their emissions have actually increased over last year, and only India is on course to meet its stated targets to cut emissions.
A, that's not good news. B, didn't Republicans spend a whole bunch of years telling us that China and India would never sign on to reduce fossil fuel emissions?
You mean they spent many years lying about China and India?
Point taken.
Now global leaders are in Poland for the 24th Conference of the Parties to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, or COP24 for short.
Which is being held in coal country and sponsored by the coal industry.
Indeed. Host nation Poland got its coal industry to sponsor the conference and is literally decking the halls of the exhibition center with piles of coal.
Really?
Yes, really.
Oh, my God.
The goal of this year's conference is to write the rule book on mechanisms for countries to meet the emissions reduction targets that nearly 200 countries agreed to in the Paris Climate Agreement back in 2015. It's also supposed to figure out how they will report, how they will verify their progress, and also to increase financial support for hard-hit developing countries. In his speech opening COP24, British documentary filmmaker and environmental activist Sir David Attenborough spoke of the urgency of a world at a crossroads.
If we don't take action, the collapse of our civilizations and the extinction of much of the natural world is on the horizon. And as the Paris Agreement proved, together we can make real change happen.
We should note that Trump's intention to withdraw the U.S. from the Paris Climate Accord can't actually occur until the day after the 2020 U.S. presidential election. However, he has succeeded in undermining the agreement and encouraging other countries like Australia, Brazil, and Poland to backslide. But there is some good news from COP24. The World Bank announced on Monday it will invest a record $100 billion to fund adaptation and mitigation projects in developing countries.
Didn't the World Bank just a few weeks ago say they would no longer fund any coal projects anywhere in the world?
That they did.
So, see, there's some progress.
Indeed.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Oh, sorry. I was chair dancing there for a minute. 8 minutes past the hour, nine on this Titanic Tuesday. And let's run over to the stress line and see who we've got there. Hey, welcome to the program. Oh, wait a minute. We're not connected. I don't know why this thing drops the damn Bluetooth. Stand by. I'll have you on in just a moment. Just stand by. You're not on the air yet. It'll happen in a second. All right, now you're on air.
Okay. Well, welcome back. Well, I mean, this is me talking to you from Decatur, Georgia.
Yeah, hey, Reggie. How's it going, man?
Just fine, man. Well, you had a big blow-up on The View yesterday with Meghan McCain and George Behar, who wanted to, I guess you wanted to talk about something near and dear her heart. And I guess she brought up Trump once again, and Meghan McCain told her not to do that. That they were trying to honor and remember George H.W. Bush. And Joy said she doesn't care what Meghan wanted her to talk about or not. She's talking. That's disrespectful that she tried to do to her. And when she had come near and dear to the heart, that was important for her to get out over the airwaves. That was yesterday. And of course, Meghan McCain didn't like it. And
apparently, Joy Behar opened up a can of whoop ass on little Meghan.
Yeah, but I'm afraid it might go even further and get far way much worse than that. I can just feel the tension, you know? You watch it from that clip, I can just feel the tension. It took all of her self-restraint and control to keep from going through Sunday to strangle Megan's neck. To raise her fucking neck.
You know, I'd like to.
75 years old. Yes, go ahead.
No, I was going to say I'd like to think Joy Behar has a little more restraint than that, but yeah, no guarantees.
Yeah, I mean she's 75 and Megan's 34 years old. So, and then do you think they should fire her? I mean, be a producer of the show. If Babs, Barbara Walters was there, of course that was her show too, by the way, which she herself created. If she was there, would you think this would still be going on or not?
Look, Meghan McCain is Meghan McCain is her father's daughter.
A bitch?
No, I'm not. Yes. No, I won't use that word. She is her father's daughter.
Sorry.
She is her father's daughter. Mm-hmm. She is as cantankerous and contentious and deliberately rude and confrontational as her father was.
Mm-hmm. And so in this case, like father, like daughter, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
You mean?
And the fact that she felt privileged enough to tell Joy Behar to shut the hell up.
Mm-hmm.
In the midst of and look, whatever George H.W. Bush was, you know, I mean.
Yes.
I sense a little bit of pushback on the idea of just having wall-to-wall hagiography, and maybe Joy Behar was a little bit sick of it, and wanted to deal with the real world problems that are being occasioned, by Trump. You know, he hasn't taken a break from being the most disastrous president of the entire history of the nation just because an ex-president passed away.
Yeah, that's true. So she got sick of all the George W. Bush Cubby's montage. I mean, just like I'm sure she got sick of John McCain's montage when he passed away, right? I mean, I could be wrong on that, but. You think she's sick of all these, I don't know, as you put it, montages of ex-presidents, passing away, distracting people from realities of this world. You know, life must go on, you know. Right?
Well, yeah, I'm not too comfortable with the idea of just pretending that George H.W. Bush was some sort of pure as the driven snow.
Right.
A friend of humanity who lived by the side of the road, because that's simply not the case. Now, on the other hand, do we run out and just how can I put this, Reggie? Over the years, I and God knows a large number of others have documented the excesses and the evils that were perpetrated by and in cooperation with George H.W. Bush.
Right.
And
well, don't forget about go ahead.
No, don't forget about what?
Don't forget about Ronald Reagan and Dick Nixon. And if I may say, Gerald Ford. Or even LBJ. That's as far as I'm going back. You know,
sure.
You know, LBJ, Dick Nixon, Gerald Ford, Reagan, and the two Bushes, you know. That's like, what, six or seven ex-presidents I named so far. What about their, shall we say, absences?
Well, but I was, I was utterly disgusted when... But it was explained away as, well, you know, when you're president, this is part of the job. When Bill Clinton went and rehabilitated the corpse of Richard Nixon, and we had a grief orgy that went on for a fucking week over that filthy old criminal.
You mean Reagan? Or
no,
Nixon?
No. It was Clinton who eulogized Nixon when he was president.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
Now,
he died in 94.
What I find interesting here, Reggie, is that while it is traditional for a sitting president to offer remarks upon the passing of an ex-president,
yes,
Donald Trump has not been asked to speak, nor will he be asked to speak at this funeral.
Right.
And in point of fact. Back last summer, when you know the handwriting was kind of on the wall that old Poppy Bush was not going to be around for just a heck of a lot longer, the Bush family had to reassure the most fragile ego on earth that when Poppy's funeral came, they would not make it about Trump, and that they would not use his funeral in order to diss Trump, because among among other things, the Bush family needed Trump's cooperation in order to provide him the funeral that they felt he deserved, including but not limited to the use of Air Force One in transporting Bush's corpse.
And what do you think about Michelle Obama's quote-unquote love affair with the Bushes in general, and George W. Bush himself in particular? They're beginning along lately. What do you think about that whole?
Who am I to tell Michelle Obama who she can and can't be friends with? I'm not enough of a mansplainer to even take that on.
Right.
But there's a reality, Reggie, that attaches to all of this.
Which is
the presidency is a small club,
right?
And no one except people who have occupied that office or been part of a family in that office can know what that office does to a human being,
right?
So if Michelle chooses to be decent to George W. Bush, that's Michelle Obama's business and not mine, because they are both, wait for it, private citizens.
Okay.
Now, I don't like George W. Bush. I didn't like him when he was president, and I don't like him now, even though every now and then he says something at least vaguely interesting or slightly humorous about Trump. For instance, when he was sitting at Trump's inauguration listening to the We All Bleed American Carnage inaugural address, and he said, man, that's some bizarre shit. For once in my life, I found myself agreeing with George W. Bush. Because that speech was bizarre. It was like a PCP trip rendered into words.
Right. Right. And I wish that people, like you said, would stop fawning over, dead presidents. I know it's disrespectful and it's honorable and it's graceful to say that, but after the funeral, after they're dead, buried, and gone, buried 6 feet deep, life must continue to go on. Well, it's going to go on regardless of whether we like it or not. You can't control or stop that, can we, Bob? Life must go on. We have to worry about this current president.
Cemeteries the world over are filled with the graves of indispensable people. And yet the sun continues to come up. The earth continues to rotate and revolve.
Right.
And if you take it the right way, that's a humbling experience.
Right.
But it is, especially among the moneyed class, it is difficult, apparently, for them to understand, as I've said in the past, that they don't hook up U-Hauls to hearses.
Right. True. They don't hook up U-Hauls to hearses or bring trucks to funerals, right?
Bingo.
Fully loaded bring trucks to funerals. You don't bring money to funerals, man. They can't take it with them.
In the wealth class, the number of people who die trying is probably approaching totality.
Right.
Because one of these days, one of them's going to figure out how to take it with them, and then everything's going to change.
Right. Well, I just wish that Johnny Boy McCain would have passed on his gracefulness down to his daughter. I mean, whatever he was, at least he was getting him go on television acting like she did with the rest of the people on The View. He was distinguished, you know. He was a mature adult, well, a rational, sane one, too. I mean, whenever somebody disagreed with him, he didn't yell and shout. He didn't yell and shout and scream and holler at them back. He talked them over and out. You know, he talked it over and out. You know, he talked it out with people. He didn't fight them back like she would have. He didn't have any childish, immature, infantile temper tantrums like his daughter. But I just wish he was raised up disciplined. Of course, she's blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white, rich, privileged, wealthy, spoiled, rich girl who never knew the word discipline. Well, probably didn't know that such a word exists. I guess that word is alien to her and people like her. Because had you or I did something on television like that, you know what would have happened to us? Me being a black man and you being a guy, you know what would have happened to us? We would have been disciplined, right?
Sure.
Right, Bobby?
Anybody not of the privileged of the privileged class.
Yes. I mean, but she should know better. She's like 34, 5 years old. And I'm sure that Joy and Whoopi and even Sonny are getting sick and tired of having to check her all the time. I mean, you know, she's like the youngest kid at the table. Well, her and Abby Huntsman. They're the two youngest kids at the table. Let the four grown adults speak. I'm sure you heard this expression when you yourself was a child. And your parents had company over. You know, children should be seen and not what Bob heard, right? I'm sure you heard of that when I had
sure.
too.
Absolutely.
And, you know what that meant, right?
Yeah, it means what it says.
Exactly. Children should be seen and not heard. I don't think she had that when she was young. I think she's an attention seeker. You know, she didn't get her way, she'd throw temper tantrums. It's like she's going to be on national television, which is the worst place to do it. Because the world is watching, right, Bob?
Always.
The world is watching. They're going to know who you really, truly are once you show yourself. And then today she got it on with Whoopi because they had a guest, you know, Stephen Scalise, who got at that baseball, you know. Whoopi didn't want to use the word smoking gun. She used the word smoking flute, but not gun. And Meghan McCain can't believe that you can't say God smoking gun on TV or anywhere else.
Oh yeah, she was. She's just petulant. On the other hand, there was another reference to a smoking gun today, and it had to do with I think it was Precious Lindsey Graham, who can't quite decide if he wants to have his human dignity or stick his nose up and the rest of his head up Donald Trump's fundament. They got briefed right today by the head of the CIA on the slaughter of Jamal Khashoggi. And when he emerged from the hearing, Lindsey Graham said, "We don't have a smoking gun, but we do have a smoking bone saw."
Right. I wonder, and what was their response to that?
Well, I mean, he was just talking to the media, so there was no real response. But both he and Bob Corker seemed convinced by Gina Haspel that the CIA has high confidence in the fact that Mohammed bin Salman arranged, ordered, orchestrated, and followed the slaughter of a journalist from Virginia, namely Jamal Khashoggi.
Does he have any proof on this, Bob? Does anybody have proof on this?
I don't know.
Does anybody have proof? Oh, you know, well, I don't either. And who would say something like that without proof?
But they were briefed behind closed doors by Gina Haspel. And frankly, you know, I'll pick and choose what I believe from the CIA. In this instance, it passes the smell test with me, simply because they could very easily have simply done the bidding of Chlamydia Claudius and said that no, Mohammed bin Salman's as pure as the driven sand, but instead that was not the way it came off.
Right. And I got some more NRA news on you, Bob, if you want to hear it. I just got onto Media Matters, and it says here that NRA spokesperson Dana Lyons calls pediatricians irresponsible for pointing out link between firearms
I've actually got that in the stack today. Dana Lush got turned loose again.
Yes.
And has declared that, I hope NRA members don't go out and start murdering pediatricians. But here's the audio.
Right.
Here's the audio.
The medical community is continuing, well, some in the medical community, I should say, are continuing to advocate for more gun control. There's a very real and very destructive epidemic of opioid addiction happening, yet there's a lot of headlines on gun safety suggesting gun control, and that seems to be what is getting pushed. Now, this article, which was published by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, is a piece that attempts to put doctors in a position of policymaking where it concerns constitutional rights. Now, the author recounts a story. It's an awful story. It's a teenage girl who took her own life with a firearm. It's horrible. It's horrible for her parents. It's horrible for anyone and anybody who's ever in that situation. But in the very next paragraph, this is what is said. A professional says this: if Ivy's family had only known that statistics show that a gun in the house is far more likely to be used, or accidentally or not, against a friend or relative than an intruder, if they'd only known that there are far more gun-related suicides than homicides, and if they'd only known that it is next to impossible to hide a firearm from a teen, research has shown that in most houses where the gun owner thinks their firearm is well hidden, the teen knows where it is. If only they'd known these things, perhaps Ivy would be alive today, end quote. That's Dr. Daniel Blumenthal there, who is suggesting that. And it seems a little bit like it's trying to incite fear into the hearts of every family across America.
Dana Lush is, of course, an idiot. The fact that everything that doctor said was true.
Right.
And she doesn't, right. and she's got a gripe with the facts, not with beliefs. This is not a philosophical
right.
debate. This is just data.
Right.
This is just data.
Right.
But the idea that somehow doctors should be forbidden from talking about medical facts is, well, you know, fascist. But then again, so is the NRA.
Right. And speaking of which, here's another one for you, Bob. It says NRA TV holds press coverage of school shootings contributes to the Wussification of America. But that was yesterday.
Yeah, I know. I saw that video clip on that. But what I found more interesting out of the Dana Lush clip is that she said she seems to assume that if we talk about guns, we can't talk about opioids, and we ought to be talking opioids and not talking about guns. This woman apparently failed freshman, you know, never took a class in logic or rhetoric or reasoning. She just opens her mouth and vomits out whatever it is that the National Ruble Association wants.
So she's their puppet. So she's like their Muppet, right?
No, she's not a puppet. She's paid to do what she does, and she knows damn well what the marching orders are.
Yes, but they gave her a radio and a TV show. They gave her a radio to talk to on a TV show called NRA's Relentless, and she's a college dropout.
Well, again, I'm not going to criticize somebody for dropping out of college or dropping out of high school or getting a PhD for that matter. We do what we do with our lives, and that's not necessarily determinative of who or what she is. But she is an idiot.
Yes. Why don't somebody challenge her on these facts? Why don't somebody challenge her? Are they afraid of her? I mean, she does have a daily radio talk show, which is 3 hours long, 5 days a week. Why don't somebody call up and challenge them? They're afraid she might hang up on them?
No, Reggie, no, no. Let me be clear about this.
Yes, go ahead.
There is no percentage in arguing with right-wing tools, okay?
Or idiots, right.
No, because they've got all the buttons. They can make people's voices go away, and if they're operating on terrestrial air, they've also got a delay unit they can use. They can push a button, and everything the person said just goes away. So it's a rigged game. They love it. They love it when people call to wrestle with them. And it's I don't do it on this program. Right wingers are not welcome on this program. I will not carry on conversations with them because one, there's somebody else who's working that side of the street. And it is only done as spectacle. It solves nothing. Right. It cures nothing. Right. It remedies nothing. It only provides entertainment spectacle for people who want to hear, is it going to be, kick that right winger's ass. Yeah, ooh, yeah, you go. But it all comes to nothing. And that's why the conversations we have here are among people of goodwill and a like-minded desire to make this country better, not to sit around and talk about what a national fucking treasure Phyllis goddamn Schlafly was.
Right, and it's a complete waste of time. I wish other progressive radio talk show hosts wouldn't even have to think about, let alone deal with those in the right. I know Stephanie makes fun of them because she hangs up on them if they go too far or if they lie to her, right?
She
makes fun of them. She makes fun of them,
I'm fortunate in that I made it clear over the years that it just ain't going to happen. So there's no fun in it for them, I guess.
I guess not, because I guess they hate you for it, because you wouldn't take their calls. I guess to them you've been discriminatory against them, because you wouldn't put up with their bullshit, because you don't have time for it.
I'll take their calls long enough, but again. I don't have any patience with them. So take the call, find out they're a maggot, and then say goodbye.
Right. And then they take the next call, find out that they're the next maggot, and then say hang up on them too as well. But like you said, these people never took any courses in school. Right?
Entirely possible. Hey, Reggie, I got to roll because I got folks on hold, but it's good to hear from you, my friend. You take care.
Okay, man, I'll call you tomorrow, man.
All right, later. Bye now. It's our buddy Reggie calling from down Georgia way. Thanks going out, by the way, to our buddy Randy in PA for jumping in on yesterday's challenge this evening. That means there is $115 remaining in that, plus $200 from this evening, $315 to go. But Randy had a favor to ask of me. Please mention that it seems to be the same group of people who respond to the challenges and keep the horn on the air, and we need some new names added into the list. So I get your point, Randy, but thank you very kindly for helping us take it down so that we're not jumping deep down in a hole and having to send Lassie off for the sheriff here for the final month of the year. Thank you, Randy. Thank you very kindly. Hopefully you'll get some company and people will jump in alongside you. And this is a weird thing. If I ever fail to mention your name as a subscriber, it is not an intentional act. PayPal has done a bunch of weird stuff over the last year. It used to be with subscribers, they all kind of rolled in at the same time, about 6 o'clock in the morning, so that I would be able to look and see everything. But I need to thank our friend Catherine for jumping in, and her subscription landed literally during the Green News Report. Bizarre stuff going on over at PayPal, and I've called them about it. I've also called them about the issue of, because some of you have said, hey, why'd you suspend my subscription? I didn't. PayPal did, but they swear up and down they didn't. And I've had more than one conversation over this, and gotten precisely zero in the way of answers from them. So that's what that status is. But thanks to all of you who do subscribe, and thanks to all of you who contribute during the program. Hopefully we will knock out Shirley's challenge a day late and take a bite out of this evening's fundraising goal as well, so that we're not, like I said, jumping into a hole this early in December. So there's 315 to go, 115 of that being Shirley's challenge. And sorry for bringing it up again, but it's all we can do. It's all we can do to keep the program going. Meanwhile, we have not heard from Thomas over at FYI Nation in a while. Hey, Thomas. Oh, Thomas.
Is that better? Can you hear me?
It works now.
There we go.
Yes, much better.
Cute. So my little dog is here entertaining me while I waited and didn't realize I'd left you on mute. I wanted to thank you for not doing the Mueller porn thing with that whole Roger Stone thing, because it seems every media outlet that we have on the so-called left seems to, I don't know, troll or whatever you want to call it with that. And it's okay in reporting the story, but to spend like a whole hour's worth of news on it or 2 hours, it's obnoxious. And I really appreciate what you did. You just let people know it was there and you moved on from it. And it's so nice to see, as opposed to, you know, trying to guide or come up with things that Mueller's going to do when nobody really knows and we don't have a report yet. And it's almost like the left is doing in the corporate side of the media what the right did with Benghazi and all that crap. And it's getting real. And I really appreciate that. Did I lose you?
No, you didn't. I'm right here, and I appreciate that. I just... I'm at a point where, you know, if something actually develops and if there's something that makes a little bit of sense to talk about relative to Mueller, cool, we can talk about it. But to just sit and engage in Mueller gossip seems non-productive, because I'm at least cognizant of the fact that, damn it, there's still a chance that it's going to turn out to be not what we wanted.
Exactly.
And there's going to be a lot of heartbroken people if Mueller comes out and says, well, yeah, I mean, you know, I dug around, I found all these criminals, but I can't tie any of it directly to Trump because he's a fuckwit and a tool who was just a puppet for other people's ambitions. Dang. You know.
And right now, that's what it looks
like. Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. And I've been saying this publicly. Might as well say it publicly. I think if something comes of this, or if, as you've said a couple of times, if impeachment happens and Democrats get their shit together, I see Trump getting reelected. And that scares the hell out of me.
It should. And like I've said before, I know of no better way to make sure he's reelected than impeaching him in the House and having the Senate acquit him, which is what will happen if the House impeaches.
You're absolutely right. And it should give everybody pause to get on this impeachment bandwagon. We should focus on important things that matter. And I'm glad that with your show, you do. Oh, and the other thing, I think it was one of your listeners, Bob, who asked about FYI Nation's way to listen, because for a little while we had lost the ability for people to use like iTunes and Winamp and stuff like that if they wanted to. That's back up on our website. So we have that working again. So people can use whatever they want again at fyination.com to listen to you, and it's not just through TuneIn anymore. So if they want to go to our site, they could do it that way, not just through our little program that we have. So it's multiple ways again. I got that working finally.
Okay, so you're saying people can just go to fyination.com and there's a player there?
Yeah, we have multiple players. So if it's iTunes or the Windows Media, they can just click on the open. It says listen now, and it's an open pop-up where it'll pop up.
Yeah, basically the same way that the player works on HeadOn.live.
Yeah, exactly. And you'll get the same show, and we play the whole thing and go from there. Democracy Now, right after you, so... we go from there now because my
show you cut me off when I run overtime.
Sorry. It's on a regular timer. I think I cut off Nicole Sandler, and I don't mean to, but we try to keep a regular schedule so people know where and go from there. I cut myself off, so there's that. Nobody's special.
Jeez.
But I'm glad to talk to you. And if you can donate, do donate, because we need voices like you on the air. And hopefully you'll get the numbers you need. You help us as much as we hopefully help you.
Well, thank you, Thomas. I do appreciate it. I do very much. It's a heck of a way to run a railroad, but it seems to be the only way we can.
Well, I feel you on that way because, you know, the Tea Parties of America behind us, and some crazy nutbag like Liz Corkin saying that, did you see that on Right Wing Watch?
Oh, yeah.
That she thinks that Bush was killed.
No, which?
With a pillow, I guess. And she says that Bush was executed. Liz Corkin. Croken?
Yeah, the lady with the shark bit finger?
Yeah, the Pizzagate...
Yeah, Pizzagate lady. Right.
Yeah, she thinks that Senior was executed.
Oh, wait, probably. There it is. Yeah, hold on. Well, let's enjoy this one. Granted, I don't have a bottle of cheap tequila handy, but shoot, yeah. You don't just blow past something like this. Oh, hell no.
Oh, no.
This week, the Department of Justice is going to talk about their findings into the Clinton Foundation probe. It was leaked on Friday that Huber has been talking to Clinton Foundation whistleblowers. The hearing that goes down.
Wait, who has been? Hang on. Huber?
Leaked on Friday that Huber has.
Uber?
Yes, Uber.
This is somebody associated with QAnon, I guess? You know, yep. I keep seeing QAnon, and every time I see QAnon, I think of like some 12-step group of people who can't help but unsafely use cotton swabs or something. Q-tip anonymous. Nope, ain't got an eardrum left. I just couldn't help myself. I rammed it right through.
Well, I think of the Q character from Star Trek Gone Rogue.
Well, that too, yeah. But, okay, Uber, but whatever.
Has been talking to Clinton Foundation whistleblowers. The hearing that goes down this week on December 5th, which happens to be General Flynn's birthday. Happy birthday, General Flynn.
She's a fan? I'm it's awfully damned hard to follow this madness. You know, I used to keep a Canadian club in my bag in case I saw a snake. Damn, where is it when I need it?
There's a very good chance that the crimes against children will be exposed and the floodgates will break open. I don't know for sure. I'm praying that will be the case.
She's crazier than a head and a hog is in the ass, isn't she?
Oh, yeah. I love her. She just makes me seem completely sane.
No, they just make shit up. Where are these places that she's getting these leaks and these rumors? I mean, a fortune cookie? A Cracker Jack box?
Bob.
The little machine that you put 50 cents in and turn the handle at the Wiggly Pig and the tattoo comes out and a leak from QAnon? What?
But whether it happens on the 5th or in a week or 3 weeks, it's happening. And it's no coincidence that George Sr. died. And by the way, he didn't die. He was executed. He was executed. So the tide has turned, you guys. The Q movement is unstoppable. The media's in a frenzy. The cabal's in the frenzy. They're all panicking. 100 military...
Oh, there was the telltale sniff. Yeah. Couple of rails. Get you right into the QAnon mindset. And take a little baking soda and rub it on your gums and the leftovers from the rails and... Yeah, George W. Bush was executed.
She's added by bath salts and Tide Pods.
Hoo-wee.
Her supply is gone, clearly.
Yeah, I wish... there's more clip left.
Police members were just sent to Gitmo. They're deployed for a year there. The Pentagon just released guidelines on transferring prisoners to Guantanamo Bay. The writing is on the wall. This is happening. Q talks about it. I've been talking about it. Nothing is going to stop these arrests from happening. Nothing. And this is going to be a big week. The world is about to change.
Yeah, good for you, Liz. What happens when the shit doesn't hit the fan tomorrow, Thomas? I mean, these freaks are like the old end times hustlers who would predict that, well, you know, it's going to be May 16th at 7:32 p.m., and we're all going to fly up into the sky.
Well, you know what's going to happen if it doesn't happen. She's just going to say, well, I got a new message or whoever her leaker is, crack of her ass, and she's just going to be saying that it's going to be the following week, like exactly like with the end time people. That is, we moved it. What was the one, Warren Jeffs, who kept moving the end times date?
He may have been one of them.
You know, they just kept moving it back a little bit and back a little bit, but don't worry, keep worrying about the end times.
Oh, it was Huber.
Same principle.
Huber's testimony. Oh, Huber.
Oh, okay.
H-U-B-E-R.
Wait.
And it's not going to happen tomorrow now because of the funeral.
Well, there's your conspiracy, dude. That's why they had to kill H.W. Bush or H.W. Bush. Clearly.
Jesus. Okay. Yeah. Just so people will know, this is John Huber. He was made a special prosecutor by Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Tood to look into whether the FBI and DOJ abused its power by getting FISA warrants on Carter Page, and to look in the probe of the Clinton Foundation. And that's pretty much all there is.
But Pizzagate.
Yeah, but Comet Ping Pong Pizza. Right.
Come on.
Oh, hell. Meanwhile, Scott in San Diego says, subject line, the QAnon lady. Ding dong, QAnon calling. I will be nominating her for the Harold Camping Best 2 out of 3 End of the World Prize. That's the one. Thank you, Scott. Hang on. Yeah, Harold Camping. He'd predict the end of the world. It wouldn't happen. He said, oh, I meant June of, yeah. My wires was crossed. Right. Man, that's some good shit. I mean, top shelf.
I need her. Has she been doxxed by anybody on the left? I need her address to send her some bath salts.
No, don't do that. You will get you'll get yourself arrested, and we don't have bail money, Thomas.
Well, fair enough. But
she'll do a 2-hour special presentation on how Thomas from the deep state is trying to get her carried off to get Comet Ping Pong pizza'd in a laundromat in Kuala Lumpur or something. I can't take it. It's past me.
Well, I figured I could not call the show and give you a prize. They're you know, to add to the staff because
I don't know how I missed that one, but I'm glad you did that because that's Titanic Tuesday material beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Well, I figured as much, and it's better you than me these days. So thank you again, Bob. I'll let somebody else talk.
All right, Thomas, you take care. We'll talk soon, all right?
Definitely, my friend.
Bye now. And let's keep things rolling and run back over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is that me?
That's you.
Hey, Bob, it's Rudy from Arizona.
Rudy, what's happening, my man?
Well, something's coming in the mail today. You know, I don't have I'm kind of like incognito. I don't have an email. Don't have credit cards. I've been trying to be hidden.
Yeah, run under the radar.
Yeah, but I wish I had an email address. But anyway, H.W.
Yes.
This guy. Have you heard of a book called Family of Secrets by Russ Baker? I think his name is. Yeah, but. It's about the Bush family from, 1900 until.
Oh God! I mean, I'm not familiar with that one itself, okay, but okay. I am damn sure familiar with the overall history.
Yeah. Well, this guy, he wrote a book. I think it was like 2003 or 2004. Anyway, he warned us, and he put it all together. And oh my God, there's a 6-part interview online. You can listen to that for free, or you can actually download the book for free. It's just fascinating. It'll piss you off. It will piss you off. Anyway, a couple things about the guy that died. You remember when they invaded Panama?
Oh, yeah.
It was like December 13th or something in, I think it was 89.
I remember it well because I was listening to it on the radio as I was driving home for Christmas, home in Alabama to see my parents. and I was almost to South Pittsburgh, Tennessee. It's weird how my memory works, but it does work that way. And I remember listening to the account of the invasion of Panama, and I said, you know, don't. Okay. I said to my, you know, because I talked to myself when I was driving alone, and I said, you know, don't get sideways with the Bush family; they will fuck you up.
Right. I was living in Los Angeles at the time. We have a station out there called KPFK, part of the Pacifica chain. You know, the free speech people. Anyway, a congressman from Panama was in Los Angeles visiting family for the Christmas holiday. And he called into the station, and he went on the air. And he said, you know, because, you know, there's always reports about, oh, we did a clean job, you know, we did what we wanted, didn't hurt anybody, blah, blah, blah. And this congressman comes on and says, don't believe a word of it. They are, right now, they have bulldozers digging mass graves for civilians that have been killed. And they're going to bury them, and sure shit,
well, we slaughtered what, 3,000 people on that little misadventure?
Well, like I said, I heard it from the congressman's mouth, and then for 10 months, they denied it. Then one day, you turn on 6 o'clock news, there's a reporter standing there, and in the background, there's a bulldozer digging up mass grave, and there's 10,000 Panamanians back there looking for their relatives, right? But for 10 months, they said, no, that's a lie. Who are the liars? Do you remember when he was president and he went on television to the nation and he held up a bag of crack? He said that it was bought in the park right across the street from the White House. Well, it took these guys 4 months to get a dealer to agree to it. And they basically said, why don't you come here? I'll sell it right here. No, you got to bring it. I won't go to that park. Sorry, no, I won't go there. It took them 4 months to get somebody to come up there and sell it to an undercover to get busted for Bush to say, right across the street, oh, my God, it's that bad. He's a liar. Did you remember the Franklin cover-up? It was in Nebraska or?
Yes.
As much as, I mean, I don't really know that much about it, but what I know about it, I fucking hate it.
A real pedophilia scandal, and in a way, I think these QAnon freaks, Rudy, are sort of rehashing that and repurposing it, and just putting a new veneer, a new patina on it, to turn it, you know, to sell to people who have no memories.
Oh, and the reason I brought up is that Bush was interested in that. Because, you know, HW, he was there at the Franklin thing. And then all the witnesses, he kind of died. Last thing, and I'm going to let go. Online, you can download this for free. The name of the book at Internet Archives, what a great site. I wish I knew how to put it. You know, the name of the book is Old Nazis, the New Right, and the Republican Party. It's by a guy named Russ Blant, and it's 130 pages, easy to read, and this is when Reagan was president, and you realize, and you read the book, and you realize, my God, Reagan brought in all these Nazis. I mean, literally, Nazis. He loved these Iron Cross and all these people that were invaded by Germans in World War II. It decided to work for the Nazis. My last point, once again, old Nazis, the New Right, and the Republican Party. Do you remember when the Bush was running for president in 88? I mean, in the 88. And he got busted. And he got busted part of his campaign. He had 4 Nazis, 2 from Hungary and 2 from. And they got busted, and it made the news for like a day and a half. But these people were actually, they were just neo-Nazis. These people had a record from World War II.
Yeah, these were the original variety. These were Nazi 1.0.
It lasted a day and a half in the news cycle, and it was gone. Now, I thought that should have been screamed, wouldn't you? I mean, these are Nazis.
Well, Rudy, not to keep you hanging on if you need to go or anything, but there, you know, there's another thing that somehow has escaped mention, and that is the role that George H.W. Bush played in killing off the Iran-Contra investigation. Do you remember do you remember the pardon of Caspar Weinberger?
All of them got pardoned, yeah. There was 120 people in the Reagan administration that got convicted. You know, anyway, yeah, of course.
You could cover this in the for-profit media without saying, oh, and he's burning in hell now or anything. You could just talk about it. Just a sober assessment of good things he did and bad things he did. Good thing he did.
Then you'd be un-American, Bob. You'd be un-American. I love these fucking wingers. Anytime you bring up, I called into a reader special and this young woman, Nancy Swain, I said, go online on YouTube. It's called School of the Assassins. And it was when I was explaining how the people from the caravan coming up here, because she didn't know any of the history about us fucking around in Central America, in Nicaragua, and all that stuff. And I said, go and look at this. It's a one-hour show, School of the Assassins, where we went down there and trained these death squads in our name to, you know, kill people. And the other person on the show said, and he started calling me American hater. And this, I said, wait a minute, this is our history. We can't just throw it underneath the rug. We need to know this stuff.
Right, that's what I'm saying, Rudy. Rudy, why can't we just soberly assess the man's life and career? He was a public figure who lived largely in the public all of his life. The whole reason he became the youngest naval aviator in history at that time was because he was rehabilitating the Bush family name after his daddy got busted under the Trading with the Enemy Act of in 1943. This isn't supposition. Yeah. This is fact. And look, you know, he signed the Americans with Disabilities Act into law after the Congress had done the heavy lifting of creating it. But he autographed it, and so it became law, and it's something that's part of his legacy.
Thank God.
But so too, part of his legacy is he signed off on. This was in the days before dark money. When they ran that filthy-ass Willie Horton ad, it was run, you know... It was run with his approval.
Oh, yeah.
Until that time, the nastiest, most racist political ad that had been run in American history, he signed off on it personally. It was his. And at the time, he said, well, you know, there were people who said, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. You and Lee Atwater will wear this around your necks to your graves. And he signed off on it anyway.
I went and looked at it a couple months ago. It's even more disgusting now. But then when it happened, it was shocking. It was, oh, my God. And it was, you know, Bob, that's interesting because when that ad happened, I just realized that I was able to spot the racist and the people that I knew by the way they reacted to that ad. But I didn't realize it at the time. I just thought of it. Last point, Bob. And H.W. is one of the only people in the fucking world that doesn't know where he was when Kennedy got shot. He was in Dallas, but he actually said that he couldn't remember. You were a kid. You remember where you were?
No, well, no, I don't. I know where I was. Okay. I don't remember though because I was all of not quite 10 months old.
Yeah, we it was fifth or sixth grade, and the whole school got together, and we got sent home. And it was a big fucking deal. Anyway, he didn't remember where he was. He's there with Nixon, but I love you, Bob. It's going in the mail today. I don't know how long it takes to get there, but. It's coming.
Well, I'll tell Boss Man Wayne to keep an eye out.
I went online on the YouTube, and I found there's a bunch of clips about the horn on YouTube, and I found out why you say, and Gina, this is for you. It was fantastic. It was a wonderful 15 minutes of Boss Man and you talking about the show. I didn't know this stuff. I didn't know the history of it. It was, I thought Gina was a nickname for Agnes. No, it was for the guy that helped to get that show on, his wonderful wife that loved me. She's the one that said, listen to this guy, Bob, he's a good guy. We need this guy. She's the person that got you on the air, right?
Right.
Gina. Yeah. And, he loved her with all his heart, and he lost you, and you're just she's the reason why you're here, and I love you, Bob. It's going in the mail. I love you. I love you. See you later.
All right. Take care, Rudy. Rudy, be good now.
Bye.
And calling from Arizona, that's the one and only Rudy Rudy. Always enjoy hearing from him. So let's keep things moving. By the way, like I said, sorry, it's 5 past the hour, 55 minutes left in the program, and we need to raise something like we need to raise $315. And we'll be even for the first week of, for the first couple of programs of December. So, we'll cross our fingers and hope for the best. Let's run over and check in, with Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Bob. Excuse me, I'm smacking because you know what I'm eating right now?
What?
No, I'm not eating a taco. But kind of close. I made chicken tortilla soup in the crock pot.
Ooh, yummy.
And I topped it with fresh avocado, cilantro, and homemade tortilla chips and sour cream.
I will take cards. I will take cards in that game. You know, you remind me, just earlier this evening, I was looking at Agnes. We were coming back home, and I said, I need to make, this time of year, I need to make a great big old pot of chicken stew, which is not that far off from what you made. But, you know, start off by smoking a whole chicken.
Oh, and, so you're going to take it to another level. You're going to smoke the damn chicken yourself.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, any excuse to get out and play with the acorn. But
smoke, I know it's your crack.
Yeah, exactly. And then make chicken broth, and then you pick the chicken and cut it up and tear it up in relatively small pieces, and then in go the tomatoes and in go the okra, and in goes the onions and the potatoes and some pasta. Like some rotini or some elbow macaroni, something like that. Some corn, some lima beans, and then you start seasoning it. And you just
lost it with the lima beans.
Well,
lima beans.
Well, we'll sub green beans for you. Will that work?
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
You know what else is really good? Talk about subbing. Snow peas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pea pods. That works really well. And then season it up and let it just simmer. And that will warm you all the way down to the core of your bones. Of course, you don't necessarily need all that warmed up where you are, but it's a toasty 29 degrees outside here, so it's that time of year, Tracy.
No, thank you.
Now, I don't know if you have heard from him yet or not. But you have a delivery to pick up from Billable Rick.
I just saw your text. Oh my God! And I'm thinking about making gumbo-ish stuff.
I'd say for this first time through, just enjoy it for what it is.
Okay, I will do that.
Because it's so special and so good that you just need to know why it is that I wax rhapsodic about this stuff.
like I'm wrapping. If you could take this chicken tortilla soup.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I mean, it's so, I mean, the friend of mine sent me the recipe, and basically, it was supposed to be chicken breast, but I didn't, Jan didn't, I mean, Alex didn't want to go out to the freezer last night to get them out the freezer. So I used chicken thighs to just dedicate the soup anyway.
And chicken thighs make such better broth.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And I, it was chicken thighs, frozen corn, black beans, fire roasted tomatoes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Chicken broth and what else? That's about it. I mean, and garlic and cumin and chili powder. And they said salt, but you know I use seasoning salt because I'm black. So
Lowry's.
But yeah. Lowry's. It's just, you know, depending on what I'm making, but I felt that white salt wouldn't have done this justice. I think it needed that extra boost of seasoning salt, you know, the Lowry's. So no, but this was one of my, I'm really proud of it.
It sounds, you know, fantastic.
I put it on this morning at 11 o'clock this morning. And so when I walked in the door, while I was listening to the show, Todd is texting me, and he just said, "Is you black?" Oh, he's stupid. He is stupid.
but only in the best way.
Only in the best. Only in the best. I love my man Todd way. But yeah, no, I just, it's, you know, when you have something that works out this well, I'm really happy with this. And this is one of those, I mean, it was just so easy. I mean, like I said, through everything, I did take the skin off of the chicken because I have this thing about chicken skin and soup, even though it doesn't.
Oh, no chicken skin and soup. Sorry.
Mm-mm.
Now cook it, because there's a boatload of flavor to be had out of it, but then you just, you know, you got to get it out of there.
I can't. Mm-mm.
I know.
Fucking slimy. It's like right up there with my aversion to mayonnaise that I'm slowly getting over. But
yeah, well, we know about the pumpkin spice latte.
We know about the mayonnaise. You have to go there. You have to go there. So yeah, I've had a pumpkin spice latte or two. So shut up. It's my inner white. It's that assimilation. Remember?
Yeah, right. You are. You're practically invisible now. You can just be standing there on the corner of what the fuck ever in Los Angeles, holding your Starbucks pumpkin spice white girl latte, and just, you know, people, well, hi, white girl. Yeah, and you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Grand Oreo in charge. I'm telling you, you know. But so of course, last night I woke up because, you know, me and my sleep patterns fucking off, and I woke up. And I have HBO Go because I have AT&T as my, not my internet provider, my cell phone provider. And as a result, I get HBO not for free, but it's included, nothing for free.
Right.
But it's included in my,
your package.
Phone. But anyway,
yes.
My package. So just so happens I turned it on, and last night, well, early this morning, there was a documentary. Say Her Name, The Life and Death.
I saw that.
Did you watch it?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I it was 2 o'clock in the morning and I'm up watching this. And because see, because of all this, in the litany of the black people who have died under suspicious circumstances or just out and out murdered by the police, the names tend to get lost. You know, they go up into the ether and then, you know, never to be seen or heard from again, only until something, you know, happens and, you know, it's back into the forefront. And not that I have forgotten about Shonda Bland, but she was, you know, in the back of my head. You know, it's those things you put in your file cabinet and then a cup of your memory and then something will happen. And it'll trigger to come out, and so this is what it was. And I was transfixed because the whole time throughout this documentary, it was her talking.
Yeah.
From the beginning of the documentary to the end of the documentary. And, you know, basically say, talking, the most frightening thing about, you know, what happened to her, or irony or whatever the case may be, was that her whole life, when she figured out what she wanted to do with her life, she figured that this is, she wanted to be an activist. She wanted to speak out against racism. She wanted to work about forming bridges between black and white and all these things. And mostly she didn't want to be, she was talking about enough of the people becoming hashtag. And she wanted to be one, becoming one. And, you know, after watching the documentary, you know, I don't know, because it's kind of hard to say whether or not she committed suicide. I mean, I know from my own struggles, it's called pink clouding, and you can tell everybody that everything's okay. And, you know, people think you're fine because you're putting out this, you know, this facade you have on this mask that, you know, I'm not going to let people know what's going on in my life because I don't want people to worry. I'm supposed to be the strong black woman, so nobody's supposed to see me crack. So, you know, we don't know what went on with her when she got locked up and the severity of the situation. I don't know, but I know what it feels like to be in jail. Fortunately, I got out okay. But it's demoralizing. It's dehumanizing. You're treated less than human, and it is so horrible the way you're treated. I mean, she was just in jail. You know, she didn't actually go into county jail or what have you. So, but I know that fear. I know what that's like, and you know. I still have my doubts because I don't see, I was looking at when they had the picture of the noose, how did they take her out of that noose? And it didn't look like it was going to happen to serve. You know, it was just.
No, there's nothing. There are no answers and nothing but questions.
Nothing but questions. And, you know, but it is an amazing. Kimber, I am not giving you any soup. Go away. It is an amazing.
You're a bad mommy.
Amazing. I know, I mean. But she's been, I gave her avocado. I gave her, you know, the tortilla chips. She got some of the chicken. She ain't suffering. She's just fine. Bad mommy. You're just trying to get it. She's just trying to get attention because she knows I'm on the phone. But what did you think of the documentary?
It was heartbreaking.
Yeah,
and because the news cycle is about 1.2 seconds long now. We are suffused with outrage, and but then we have to turn our outrage to the next outrage.
Mm-hmm.
And I was glad for the reminder. If that makes any sense.
No, it does. And that's the thing about, like I said, filed away in the file cabinet of my memory. Because it's not like I forgot about who she was. You know, but...
No, you had no choice but to move to the next madness.
Right. To the young man being shot and killed in Alabama because he looked like he... Look, could shoot somebody. I don't know.
Or the guy in Chicago who had taken down the bad guy. Or.
It's that or. You know, it's that. At some point, you know, like you know, only thing Sandra Brand ever wanted was in the police brutality, like they were talking about her notebook with all the stuff that she wanted to do and all the stuff that she was working on and all the things that she had, all the evidence and the data that she had gathered about police, you know, police brutality cases and stuff like that, that she wanted to bring to the forefront.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, and then with all of a sudden that, and, you know, for those just watching when she was, you know, when she, the whole thing about being pulled over in the first place. And, you know, and the cop asked her, well, you know, why are you so upset? I'm like, he just pulled me over for some bullshit. And I just so happens I was doing some, you know, doing some Sandra Bland Googling. And there was an article written by a legal expert from CNN talking about the about, you know, people being pulled over and what are your rights and stuff. And unbeknownst, I didn't know that the cops have the absolute right, if they pull you over, to make you get out the car. And most people don't know that.
Yeah.
But also that we as citizens have the right to, once they give us the ticket, to leave. They, you after you sign the ticket or what have you,
yeah, you're
you
free, you're free,
no,
you're free to go. Yeah, because
it's
you've been
free to go.
A ticket constitutes a summons.
Mm-hmm.
And once you've accepted service of the summons, get on down the road.
But see, what most people don't realize, and I didn't realize until after I read this article, was the fact that once the ticket is given, you are no longer under arrest. You're no longer having, you know, or, you know, summons or what have you. So that, like, you have no right, you know, that that right to, you know, not self-incriminate yourself, pleading the fifth. So after the cop gives you the ticket, basically anything that you say after the fact can be used against you, because he is still now he is investigating you. And I'm like, what? Wow. So, you know, what, and all that stuff that he was doing was just to, you know, see if he could get her on anything else. But what's so upsetting about what happened to her, and, you know, and we all know this, that if Sandra Bland had been a white woman, she would be alive today. Because none of that would have happened.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt in that.
None of that would have happened. Even the woman, the minister that they were interviewing, she's like, you know, I'm keenly aware of my privilege as a white woman. That the worst thing they would have, I mean, he would have given her this warning and let her go about her business. He wouldn't have said anything else to her if he would have even have pulled her over in the first place.
Very likely not.
Watching, you know, him, you know, I'm going to light you up and all this, and, you know, put out your cigarette and all this stuff. Now, I understand Sandra Bland's anger. I understand it, because I'm watching this and I'm getting angry, because, you know, you pulled me over for some bullshit in the first place, and then you're going to lecture me and all this, and then you're telling me to put out my cigarette, you know. You get to that point where you're tired of being pushed around.
Sure.
But then again, you get to that point also that, you know, it's called self-preservation.
Right, which is what makes things like black people don't blend.
Mm-hmm.
It's so infuriating. And I confess to remembering a movie line the minute I saw, I first read that story and heard that line. Marissa Tomei looking at Joe Pesci in My Cousin Vinny and saying, oh, yeah, you blend.
Right. That's one of my favorite movies. Because you're like, oh, right, you blend. You fit into the demographic.
I mean,
really well.
What does this clown in Arizona want, Tracy? I mean, look, if you want blending, meet them at the refugee relocation center, and I don't know, hand them each a pint of mayonnaise.
Right.
Or a pumpkin spice latte. And by the way, I had a note from Warrior Witch over in the chat room in regard to white girl pumpkin spice lattes. Come on, Bob. Us white girls don't just drink pumpkin spice. We also snort that shit like cocaine every year.
Well, I have moved on from my pumpkin spice lattes to Witcher Dream lattes, which is I don't know exactly what kind of tea it is, but it's amazing. It's a tea-based latte. When the first time I tasted it, I swear to God, it tasted like Christmas. If there was such a thing as something tasting like Christmas, Winter Dream latte.
Well, when we were on the great North Georgia Starbucks tour of 2018, I found out that they are currently offering something, juniper flavored coffee.
What is juniper?
You know that botanical herb that makes gin taste like a pine tree?
Hey.
That's juniper.
Hey. I just started drinking gin recently.
Well, it's probably still warm enough for gin there where you are.
Oh, yeah. No, I had Bombay Sapphire gin with of course, tonic water and a twist of lime on the rocks. And I have to say, damn, that was good. I mean, how white could I be? Or drink a gin and tonic.
We won't turn you in, but
sitting around drinking.
I'm just telling you, sitting around drinking gin and tonics on the veranda, Tracy.
Do I have to hand you my black card? I don't know.
your black card's getting a little pale.
That's why my mom is mad that she, you know, when it was time for me to go away to college, she's like, I should have sent your ass to a black college. You were white people.
I know. Tracy, you have yourself a wonderful evening, dear. And I mean, I know LA's a big place, but you got to figure out a way to.
I'm going to figure out how to hook up with Rick. I'm going to text him right now. And I'm like, you've been holding back on me, homie? What's up with that?
It's there. It's there, and it's waiting on you.
Oh, my.
Because on Friday on the front porch or something, we're going to have a dual Kaneka review from you and Billable Rick.
Okay, I'm ready.
And let me tell you, if you want to just fire up the grill, the gas grill, right?
We have gas and charcoal. Remember, it's a dual drill.
This is just a one-pound package, so I'd use gas. I mean, it's no big deal.
Okay.
If you do want to get creative with it, now this is simple because then the flavor comes through. Get yourself a really good hot dog or hoagie bun, a good one.
Mm.
And saute.
Like King's Hawaiian.
Yeah,
or...
if you like that, I'm not into the sweet, but if you are, that's
but
cool.
We also have potato. We have potato bread buns.
Yeah, see those. That'd be good. And then saute yourself some green peppers and onions and mushrooms.
Okay.
And just put the Kaneka in the bun, and put the potatoes or the peppers and onions and mushrooms in on top of it. No mustard, no ketchup, no mayo, no nothing. Just that, and it'll be everything in the world you ever. Oh, you see, I'm hoping this is kind of perverse, but I'm hoping I've created a problem because I want to start a nationwide. Everybody in the country deserves to be able to have Kaneka movement.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to text Rick in a minute and say, "Yo, I hear you holding. Were you right?
Yeah,
are you right and dirty?
Yeah, you holding, man?
Where my sausage? You holding, man?
Hey man, you got my pound?
You got my pound." Oh, Jesus. Anyway, and just for grins and giggles, I'm going to throw in $20 on the wood pile of whether you're trying to get a bonfire going for fundraising.
Well, that would be awesome because that'll take us down to less than 100. It'll take us down to $95 to finish tomorrow, finish yesterday. So thank you, Tracy. Thank you a ton. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem, dear. You take care.
Enjoy the soup. We'll talk soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye now. The one and only Tracy, the lady cab driver calling from somewhere in the wilds of Los Angeles. And now we continue onward to Scott in San Diego, keeping that Southern California thing going. Hey, Scott. Okay, how do I make this not? We'll get there in a minute. I'm so confused. There we are. Are you there, Scott?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's all a matter of hitting the right switch at the right time in the right way.
You got to hold one in the air, hand up in the air and stand on one leg and probably tongue just right, and then, you know, then it's radio.
Yeah, or it also that technique also works if you add aluminum foil if you're getting your TV via rabbit ears. You can do just some amazing poses to get that signal to come on in. But anyway, I have a suggestion for Tracy if she doesn't want to cause her black card to fade while she's sitting on the veranda drinking Bombay gin and tonic with a twist of lime. Crank up the music player and play an old Ray Charles tune, I think it was. Maybe a duet with him and somebody else. Gin and Juice, I think, was the name of it. So that'll balance out the humors or whatever it is that causes your black card to fade. Or conversely, your white card to darken. You know, it's these things do occur in today's world. We must know what to do to help combat them. But that's not why I called.
No, of course not. No.
That's never why I called. I wasn't even going to call, but I got inspired by Rudy Rudy. He mentioned in passing the possible George H.W. Bush connection or information about the JFK assassination. And two things dawned on me, one of them in the wee hours, and I'll share that in a moment. But the other one was just this afternoon. I got to thinking about which presidents have I seen in person. And I remember seeing Reagan on the White House lawn taking off with Nancy in the helicopter to go wherever they were going. It's around the holidays in the early 80s. Because my brother, who was Secret Service guy, took us in for a special tour to see all the pretty Christmas decorations. And it was pretty, much prettier than what Melania has come up with her terrifying red trees or whatever the hell she's got going on. And who else have I seen in person, U.S. presidents? I this is technically not qualifying, but I did see Jimmy Carter in 76 campaigning in my hometown, Alexandria, Virginia. So that kind of counts. I did rush for assistance when being set upon by a group of high school thugs, white thugs, I should say, from a neighboring school when I was like a freshman in high school. I ran to the first house that I could get to get help. And it turned out it was Jerry and Betty Ford's house. So,
holy cow.
I didn't meet Mr. Ford, but I met Betty. She mixed me a drink and while we waited for the cops to show up. And while she's calling the police, I'm standing in the hallway. God, I wasn't going to go here at all. But while I'm standing in their little foyer, I look and there's like a room off to the side and it looks like a den. There's a desk and an easy chair and, you know, a big bookshelf with all kinds of books on it. And I'm looking and I'm seeing the Warren Report, the conclusions of it, the big volume, 800 and some odd pages. and then all 26 volumes of supporting evidence and testimony lining the rest of the shelf.
Why am I thinking that if you opened that up, it would have been inscribed to Whitey from the whole Wonderland gang?
Well, I don't know, Bob. Why would it? But so then it just still didn't dawn on me whose house I was in. Hanging on the door to this little den was a dry cleaning bag with a couple of suits in it, men's suits, with a tag clearly visible that said Ford. And it still didn't dawn on me whose house I was in.
Well, it was too prosaic.
Well, yeah. But it finally, later that evening, it dawned on me that I was in Jerry and Betty Ford's house. But anyway, so that's not a qualifying presidential viewing, but it's close enough for my purposes. And then I saw George H.W. Bush in person. I'd forgotten completely about that in Kansas City. He had come to town to encourage us all to just say no to drugs over on the east side of town. And my brother again got me into it to see him, and I was way in the back of the auditorium. He was just a little white speck on the horizon. But so I had forgotten all about that, you know, having seen him in the flesh. But that's also not why I called. Why I called was Rudy mentioned the JFK assassination and possible Bush connection. And in the wee hours, it dawned on me, and I jotted down these notes. So hang on to your iambic pentameter. It's very brief, but we'll see how it goes. Four boxes under one dome. I'm referring, of course, to the caskets of JFK, LBJ, Gerald Ford, and George H.W. Bush, all of which, have lain in state in the rotunda of the U.S. Capitol. One can't help but notice the ironic connections. JFK was the victim of an assassination. LBJ succeeded him in office, and some say he had a hand in JFK's murder. Ford helped write the official story of the supposed circumstances. A lone nut, three shots, two hits, one miss. Move along. There's nothing else to see here. And now, George H.W. Bush, who apparently knew of a plot in advance, and some say had a deeper clandestine connection to the event. Four boxes under one dome. One wonders endlessly. So that's my little commentary.
And that's an interesting common thread.
Yeah.
Which raises, you know, the issue. Well, one, they couldn't have done that. They couldn't have given Nixon a lying in state and not had riots.
Oh, well, Nixon didn't want one. He knew that.
Well, he knew somebody would sneak off with his corpse and dump him in the Potomac.
Well, what did you say Hunter Thompson wanted done with Nixon?
He wanted Nixon stuffed in a 55-gallon toxic waste drum and dumped in the Mariana Trench.
There you go.
But is it because Reagan hated the Congress so much that he didn't have a lying in state?
You know, I don't remember. I think it was more California centric, or did Reagan? Because I remember
no.
That was a seemingly endless national day of mourning and/or fellatio of old 666. It seemed like it was never going to end. And he did. Maybe they just drove the hearse past the Capitol and the White House and all, and then went back and put it on the plane and took it back to California.
No, I mean, he died in California, so...
Yeah, he did, but I'm almost sure that they brought him back, not reanimation-wise, but now I've got to look it up, because I...
And you raise an interesting point. That works well with a note that I just got from Darlene in Connecticut a minute ago. Subject line, yeah, H.W. Yeah, H.W. did good things and he did bad things. Just like Hamilton, Jefferson, Lincoln, FDR, Kennedy, etc. before him, the list goes on. They were human and flawed. But the hagiography is rampant when it comes to Republicans, and Darlene's absolutely correct in this regard. I can't, well, I mean, she doesn't mean she wants anything to happen quickly or anything, but she says, I can't wait to see how kind Republicans are when Jimmy Carter and Clinton pass on. My guess is we won't see this the same in return. Democrats are always quick to overlook, compliment, and revere Republicans. I don't see the same in reverse. You agree, Bob? And I do, because and I can almost tell you what it'll be like. When Clinton goes, it will be 3 days of nonstop whitewater and nothing else. And perjury, and what the definition of is, and a stained blue dress, and Linda Tripp, and Monica Lewinsky, and whether or not she was a victim of a rape, even though she said it was consensual. And with Jimmy Carter, it'll be, well, you know, he was a good man, but he was a terrible president. When in fact, when it comes right down to it, 100 years from now, Jimmy Carter will probably be revered as something approaching a fucking saint. When you look at the people who bookended him and came after.
Well, way more honorable than a dozen or more that I could mention, who have nearly a dozen who have been in that office in my lifetime. Yeah, I mean, I'm sad that Carter didn't prevail in 1980, but I sure as hell understand why he didn't.
And Darlene continues and says, as for Michelle's love of the Bushes, well, let me preface my comment with this. I admire Michelle. She's a consummate, lovely class act. Brilliant, fascinating, very willing to admit her vulnerabilities to the world, not to mention funny as hell. I'm thinking she adores W and his late father, 41, because they treated her and Barack with respect. Granted, it was as public citizens, as you noted before, Bob, but when you think about how abominably Mitch and his ilk treated Barack when he was president and treated Michelle when she was first lady, well, I'm thinking she finds the Bushes refreshing. Talk about strange bedfellows. And she says, P.S., it says something when we can refer to our former first lady simply as Michelle, and pretty much everyone on the planet knows who we mean.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes, you know, when you become known as when you're just known by your first name, you've arrived.
Yeah, like Mohammed, Hitler, Cher.
No, those were not. Yeah, Hitler was not his first name. Damn it.
Oh well, yeah, that's true. Well, Adolf. You know, you're not talking meat tenderizer when you utter.
Adolf. Depending on where you are, you could be talking about the legendary head coach of the Kentucky basketball team, vile old racist that he was, Adolf Rupp.
Oh well, or Adolf Zucker, who I think headed Paramount for a long time.
Or you could be talking about the guy who invented meat tenderizer.
Well, yeah. So, but we digress. Well, according to the architect of the Capitol. Regarding Ronald Wilson Reagan, old 666. His body lay in repose at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley, California, and then lay in state in the U.S. Capitol Rotunda. But see, for my purposes, for my little bit that I did about the four presidents that I mentioned, Reagan wouldn't have fit.
Yeah, right. It ruined the bit.
But well, and some people don't probably are their ears perked up and they wonder what I meant about George H.W. Bush apparently knowing of a plot in advance. And here's how that works out. On the afternoon of the assassination, he called the FBI. And apparently this is
of record.
Oh yes, there are documents that indicate that this is exactly what happened. He apparently said that he had heard or was aware of a white supremacist by the name I believe the name was James Parrott, P-A-R-R-O-T-T, who incidentally was in Dallas that day watching as the headshot struck Kennedy. There's photographic evidence of that. But anyway, this memo or memorandum or whatever it was in the FBI files indicate that the caller was a George Bush of the CIA. Well, this was in 1963. From all outward appearances, George H.W. Bush in 1963 had business in the oil industry because he wasn't even
wasn't that Zapata Oil?
Exactly. and interestingly enough, two of the civilian ships that were in support of the Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba in April of 61, one of the ships was named Zapata, and the other was named Barbara, if you can believe that. But see, Bush Sr. wasn't even named CIA director until Nixon's days, if I'm not mistaken.
First, he was Republican. Nixon made him chair of the Republican National Committee.
Yeah.
And then he became CIA director, I think, if I have my timeline correct.
Right. And then after Nixon resigned and Ford came in, Ford then made Bush ambassador to China. Well, the guy couldn't hold a job. That's what it comes down to. You look at his damn resume, and it's like every year he's going off to do something else. But
Nixon, if I recall correctly, Nixon despised George H.W. Bush and said that he had to give him the RNC just because he'd been, you know, a loyal foot soldier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Zapata Offshore Company, Houston, Texas.
Yeah, that was his business.
And what's interesting is presumptively where that name comes from, and that is, of course, Emiliano Zapata.
That's the Mexican fellow, right?
Who was a revolutionary in the Mexican Revolution and a guerrilla against the established government, which would fit nicely with the hostility toward the Cuban government at the time.
Mm-hmm. So, well, and another thing that people probably have forgotten is, do you remember in October, I guess, of last year, there was the assassinations back after Oliver Stone's movie JFK, it moved the public to inspire the Congress to set up a mechanism whereby long-hidden documents related to the JFK assassination could eventually be released to the public. And they did it in stages. The first group of documents, which were fairly innocuous, got released right away within a couple of years. But there is a batch of secret documents that the proviso was to hold them undercover for 25 years, meaning by 2017. Well, the person with the final say on this by that time, 2017, was Donald Trump. And Donald Trump basically conferred with the CIA to make sure that they wanted all of these secret documents to be released. And the CIA, since George Bush Sr. was still alive, said, well, no, I don't think so. Let's keep them under lock and key for another few years, which is what eventually was done. Now that H.W. Bush is gone, it's possible that when those documents do see the light of day, if ever, there may be information that by that time will have been undercover for, God, upwards of 60 years or more. So they just have to wait for these folks to die off who could have had any connection at all, or at least knew what the real story was, because that lone nut stuff doesn't fly, you know?
Not for me, no.
So, but anyway, I didn't necessarily want to go there, but since Rudy mentioned JFK's assassination and George H.W. Bush, and since I had written that thing last night, I figured I would share it with the family. Because connections are very interesting things. They're very interesting things. If you ever saw I guess it was a BBC series in the 80s, a guy named James Burke did several seasons of a program called Connections, where he takes a thing, could be an ordinary object, and makes the connection between it and goes all through history with all of these interesting, fascinating twists and turns, and sums it up at the end of the show saying how all of it tied together and had echoes of inevitability. It's fascinating. I don't know if any of those are streaming, but the James Burke program was called Connections.
And let us note one other thing in the context of George H.W. Bush, Scott.
Sure.
Contrary to what Donald Trump said, he was not a co-conspirator there's no suggestion anywhere that he was a co-conspirator with Lee Harvey Oswald.
Who, Bush?
Yeah.
No, I would think
but,
not.
But that's what Trump said.
Well, no, I missed that. When was that?
Oh, that was during the campaign.
Was this where Ted Cruz's daddy?
I'm sorry. That was Ted Cruz's dad. I was misremembering. but the bottom line is that Trump despises the Bushes,
mm-hmm.
because by hook or by crook, that family really did accumulate actual wealth, and they became a dynastic family.
Yeah, mostly by crook.
And Trump wants to be a dynastic family. And so he deeply resents the patrician nature of the Bush clan. And let's remember, whatever else you say about his daddy, Prescott, they were early supporters of a woman's right to choose and Planned Parenthood and mm-hmm. And contraception in Connecticut. You know, there's a tendency to associate George H.W. Bush with Texas, but he's no more a Texan than I am. He's old. He's patrician New England, but not even that, because actually the Bush family had to flee Columbus, Ohio, in the aftermath of the First World War, after Prescott got busted telling a humongous whopping lie about how he saved the life of Black Jack Pershing.
I wasn't aware of that story.
His mother ballyhooed it all over Columbus, and then when it turned out to be bullshit, they were laughing stocks.
This was Dorothy Walker, I guess her maiden name was. Prescott's wife.
Yes.
Okay.
No, Prescott's mama.
Oh, Prescott's mother. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so they went to New England.
I never knew that.
And it was during his military service that allegedly Prescott stole the skull of Geronimo while stationed in Oklahoma and brought it back to the dungeon, or whatever it's called, of Skull and Bones at Yale.
Huh. Well, were they moneyed when they were still in Columbus, Ohio?
They were somewhat moneyed, because that family came to financial prominence. Prior to the First World War, they had largely been a bunch of a family that tended toward Episcopal priests.
Mm-hmm.
But during the First World War, one scion of that family was named head of the War Materiels Board.
Oh.
And got trotters in the trough.
Now, before Prescott W's grandfather and HW's daddy was in the Senate, wasn't he a big investment person on Wall Street? I want to say Brown Brothers Harriman.
Prescott was as a younger man, Prescott was with Brown Brothers Harriman, and that's where he got tied up with a guy named Fritz, and I never know how to pronounce it. I never know the German pronunciation. Tyson or Thiessen, T-H-Y-S-S-E-N,
mm-hmm.
who was known
as,
he was known as Hitler's angel, and he was tied to Krupp.
Okay.
And Brown Brothers Harriman continued doing business until they and Prescott himself were busted under the Trading with the Enemies Act. And that's what made necessary young George H.W.'s entry into the Naval Aviation Corps as the youngest naval aviator up until that time.
Well, something you said rang a little bell for me, and I Googled it real quick. A couple of years ago, there was a book called The Devil's Chessboard, which I have not read yet. There's so many damn books. But it's by, scroll down here. It's from a couple of years ago. It's The Devil's Chessboard, and the subtitle is Alan Dulles, the CIA, and the Rise of America's Secret Government. It's by David Talbot, T-A-L-B-O-T. And if I'm not mistaken, based on what I've heard about the book, without having read it, the elder Bush, the Prescott Bush and some of that era figure fairly prominently in this story, because they're all connected, or if not connected, supportive of one another. And when I say they, I mean these moneyed folks from New England and the movers and shakers who, for most of the 20th century, especially the middle and the latter, toward the latter half, you take like the Dulles brothers, Alan Dulles, who was head of the CIA, John Foster Dulles, who was Secretary of State under Eisenhower. You know, these folks were not letting grass grow under their feet to amass great wealth and power all through the course of the 20th century. You know, so who knows what stories there are yet to be told now that H.W. Bush has gone on to whatever's next for him. Because usually the rule of thumb is, you know, the real good stuff, the real juicy details don't come out until after they've been planted. And by they, I don't mean the stories being planted. I mean the corpse of the departed person has been planted. And some of it, I'm sure, will be hair-raising. You know, you wonder how we got to where we are. Well, past is prologue, like it says on, I guess, the archives building in D.C. But geez, I'm sure there's a wealth of information yet to come out about the guy. Because if we know as much as we already know about the history of that family and the fortunes and the games that they played, that's just what we do know. That's the tip of the iceberg. But there's like 90% more iceberg hidden yet to be revealed. So anyway, well, I've run out the clock. I didn't mean to either.
That's okay. That's okay. Scott, you have yourself a good evening. And hopefully
I will, Bob.
We'll move on from this hagiography to other and more meaningful things at a later date.
Well, yeah, and save me some chicken stew. You were making my mouth water, and it made me think of my mother's chicken and dumplings. And she had the best chicken and dumplings. They weren't, like, weighty, the dumplings weren't. And I believe she made them with Bisquick, the recipe on the side of the Bisquick box.
Yeah.
And you had to keep a spoon resting on them, or they'd levitate up out of the chicken gravy and the chunks of chicken and carrots and peas and stuff.
And you gotta, and when you put the dumplings in, you got to put the lid down because the dumplings have to steam when they rise or else they will be sad. That's a technical cooking term, sad dumplings.
Nobody likes sad dumplings. And if we don't know that about Trump by now, we'll never know it. So,
Wait a minute.
There you go.
That was too well played to let you get away without one of those. Scott, have a good evening, my friend.
They just come to me, Bob. I don't know why. They just come to me.
You're only the conduit.
Yes. The muse is at work. Anyway, take care, Bob. Have a nice night.
All right. Later, Scott. Bye now.
See ya.
And let's see. One last thing on the way out the door. A couple of notes. Now, first of all, happy birthday to our buddy Arthur. Happy 39th birthday to our buddy Arthur. And thanks for jumping in on fundraising this evening. That means we got $90 left to go last night, $200 for tonight. So that'll make tomorrow night $490. But thank you very kindly for jumping in, Arthur, and a happy, happy, happy 39th birthday. Enjoy the year of your youth, and do something productive with the remainder of your birthday evening. Happy birthday, Arthur! Thanks for being part of the community. Interesting. Within 2 minutes of each other, I got two separate emails. One from Bill in Allentown. Subject line: connections. I have seasons 1 and 3 on DVD. Started thinking about it when Scott first said the word connection. Ron and Raleigh followed by saying the connections programs, except for one season, can be found on YouTube. As far as the Kennedy assassination, the question that piques my interest is, why won't the Connolly family allow the exhumation of John Connolly's body to remove and weigh the bullet fragments in his wrist, which could put paid to the single bullet theory? And therein, Ron, I think you have the answer. I think there is still a degree of manifest fear of what might happen in this country if we knew in full all of what happened on that murderous, blood-soaked day. Let's see, what's this? He was not the youngest Navy pilot, George H.W. Bush. He was beaten by 11 days by Chuck Downey. Thank you, Lee, our ad hoc horn research department. Thank you. And just on the way out the door, a piece of breaking news. According to the Mueller team, Michael Flynn gave substantial aid to the special counsel's inquiry, Mueller recommending little to no prison time for him. Wonder what all he done said. I wonder if this will piss off Julius Keeser. You never know. Yes, we do. He'll be having a hissy. Right. Well, thanks, everybody. Thanks to those of you who jumped in this evening to help with fundraising. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this conversation, ongoing as it is. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks in the chat room this evening to Steve from Georgistan and to Sparky. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you very kindly to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.